Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. James, this morning we have news that the Cabinet don't like one another. Tell us a little bit more about the latest tiff amongst ministers.
So today's story in the Times is actually, when you think about it, phenomenally depressing. It's that Cabinet ministers complaining that Michael Gove was using long economic-y words in Cabinet and talking about what's apparently an obscure directive called the MiFID. What makes this so depressing is that the long economic-y words Michael Gove were using are actually things that anyone who sits around that Cabinet table should know about. He was talking about Joseph Schumpeter and creative destruction, and he was talking about whether the Bank of England's very loose monetary policy had created zombie companies. And then on MiFID, MiFID is absolutely crucial to Brexit, because if under MiFID 2, which starts next year, the EU was to say that the UK was equivalent in financial services regulation, that would be a way for the City of London to carry on selling financial service products into the EU market even after Brexit. So I think what we are seeing here is that there are some know-nothings sitting around the Cabinet table, some people who are ignorant and not interested in correcting their own ignorance. And I think that is phenomenally depressing about British politics.
Katie, isn't it actually just the case that Michael Gove is straying onto someone else's turf and he should be talking about his own acronyms within his own department, of which there are many?
First of all, I think we should praise Michael Gove for actually using words that are in a dictionary, because the last time I checked, economic-y isn't. So that's one thing he has managed to do. I think there's definitely something about, obviously, people should focus on their own briefs. And when I was at the CPS launch on Monday, I noticed Amber Rudd really tried to stick to her own brief. But that was because that was a public speech. And there's a difference, because if you're all sat around a Cabinet table, I think that's a chance where you should be having a discussion which probably, or hopefully, won't end up in the papers, and it's a chance to express those views. But I think the reason it's being interpreted as it is, and perhaps people are reading things into things that they shouldn't or wouldn't normally do, is because there was so much tension surrounding this budget, and it's such a crunch moment, and there are so many knives out for Hammond, that it means even the smallest thing is seen as kind of something by Hammond's own, you know, allies, if he has met any, as going against him, when perhaps it's actually just Gove trying to raise a valid point.
James, is this not also Gove making clear how dissatisfied he is with Philip Hammond? If he is using these words to make a point beyond just the fact that he knows things, he has expressed his dissatisfaction with other aspects of Philip Hammond's stances on policies.
I think if you look at the Gove-Boris Johnson letter to Theresa May, you look at this intervention. I think the leaders of the Brexit campaign, if they thought everything was going smoothly, would not be behaving like this. They are worried about where things are going to end up. I think there is also another point here, which is actually about the Bank of England and central bank independence. The Bank of England preciously guards its independence, but we have not had a normal monetary policy for over a decade now. That is beginning to have real consequences for the economy. The government can't be blind to that. And I think one of the things that some cabinet ministers objected to was they felt Gove shouldn't be talking about this because this was the pretext of the independent central bank. Central bank independence doesn't require the government to be blind to the effects of the Bank of England's actions on the broader economy.
In terms of other cabinet ministers, Katie, Sajid Javid has been giving a speech in Bristol today about house building. Tell us a little bit more about that and whether he's being a troublemaker as well.
Well, as a millennial myself, I was quite happy to see Sajid Javid's speech today, because we've had a week where there was an editorial saying that the reason millennials aren't on the property ladder is they just eat too many avocados, buy too many sandwiches, and sometimes they go on weekend breaks. And Sajid Javid actually was doing a pitch to younger voters here, where he said that it was ridiculous to suggest that you just need to stop eating avocados to save £90,000 for a housing deposit. And I think overall he was pointing out that the situation at the moment is quite unfair. It's very hard to see how young voters are going to get on the property ladder, and his pitch was that the Tories are going to do something about that. Now, we know that the Tories have been saying they're going to do something about it for some time, as does every government, but he promised to do it by saying, look to the budget, where we are really going to say, we're going to show you how serious we are about doing this. I think that is that's a gesture that many people in the party will be glad of. But I do think some people at number 11 will have been watching the screen and thinking, oh, thanks, Edward, you're putting a bit more pressure on us. Because at the moment, there does seem to be an internal wrangle between certain figures in the cabinet, and particularly on the Sajid Javid side and the Treasury, about how they are going to be radical. We saw Philip Hammond yesterday say there's no silver bullet when it comes to solving the housing crisis. But the people around Sajid Javid really think that you need to do borrowing or something really radical in order to fix this.
James, I thought it was striking that at the end of his speech, Javid listed all the people who want to build more homes, and he included the Chancellor, the Prime Minister. Is this his way of trying to sort of bind them in to his way of thinking on house building? Is he just stating a fact that they do want to build more homes? It's just they disagree over where and how.
Interestingly, I think Sajid Javid is in alignment with both the PM and the Chancellor, but he wants to do both bits, whereas they only want to do one bit each. You know, he is in alignment with Philip Hammond on the need for kind of pretty dramatic planning reform to get more houses built. He is in alignment with Theresa May on spending more money. The problem is that Theresa May and Philip Hammond don't agree. Philip Hammond thinks that there's not much point in spending more money if you're not going to do planning reform. Theresa May doesn't want to do planning reform because she doesn't like the idea of more houses being built in Maidenhead and other places with lots of greenbelt land. Now, but I think the Tories really do have to sort this, because, you know, owning a home is one of the biggest predictors of what makes people vote Conservative. At the last election, there's never been such a big gap between the behaviour of people who own and people who rent. And I think that's because fewer and fewer people who rent imagine that in the next 4 or 5 years, they're going to become homeowners. And, you know, look, avocado on toast is a great innovation. You can't expect people to stop eating avocado on toast and then be able to buy a house. I mean, this is just a ridiculous notion.
They could eat better food, I suppose, but it wouldn't help the housing crisis.
Well, I think avocado on toast is quite tasty.
One man who probably doesn't eat avocado on toast is David Davis, who is preparing for a speech tonight. James, what is he expected to say?
Well, I'm told that this is going to be a bit more leg from the British government on what the end state they want out of the EU-UK relationship is. And I think it comes at a very interesting time in the Brexit talks. You've got Donald Tusk basically going to tell Theresa May at this summit in Sweden that, you know, don't think you're going to get sufficient progress in December unless you essentially buck your ideas up. And I think the UK government is getting close to basically making clear how much more money it is prepared to offer the EU to try and kickstart these talks.
Katie, the focus on Brexit has really been on Parliament this week. But what noises have been coming out of Brussels?
Well, I think when Theresa May had the EU Council meeting, everyone seemed to think it didn't go perfectly, because obviously Britain wasn't given the green light to progress to the second stage of talks. But there is a feeling and definitely a sentiment that it was going to be okay, because when they meet again in December, that's when it will happen. And I think all the soundings from Brussels, and this could be posturing, have been kind of pouring caution on the idea and suggesting that actually they're not quite there yet. Britain will need to pay up, and Britain will also need to, you know, come up with a few more ideas. And I think that will, while obviously Parliament looks at this bill, one of the bigger issues here is if Britain gets to the point that it is not given the green light to move to trade in December, and that is when you're going to see real repercussions in the House, especially from the Brexit side, so the Brexiteers, over whether now Number 10 should just abandon the idea of a deal.
And James, as we started this podcast on people in the Cabinet not getting on, what are DD's relationships with other Cabinet ministers like at towards the end of this week?
I think the fascinating thing about the DD is he has kind of adopted a kind of slightly neutral position within the cabinet. He's trying to avoid being associated with the kind of Boris, Gove, Vote Leave faction, and also with the kind of more Philip Hammond-led kind of Remainer wing. He's trying to kind of play the role of umpire. What I think is interesting in this speech is we're going to get a bit more sign of where he stands in that great cabinet debate about EA- versus CETA+.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And you can listen to this and all our other podcasts on the iTunes store. This one is called Coffee House Shots. And a reminder that you can get a special subscription offer of 12 issues for just £12 at spectator.co.uk/subscribe.